Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Big, big news, Carol. Has it been delivered to your desk?
It's on my desk.
I just got it. It is the script. Kevin Killeen said when he handed it to me, it's the greatest script since The Irishman. And 4 hours.
Is that what he said?
And 4 hours shorter. Yeah, I think he was. But have you had a chance to look at it at all?
What I did was I read the first page, and then I went to the actor page at the back.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Well, let me, upon first glance here,
it's rather thick.
It's an Amy Marscore's love fest because her name is on every page of this thing.
He likes so. Amy.
She's the new shiny object around here, right?
Oh, so my gosh. Is that?
Well, let's face it, you know, we got to give attention to
the newbie.
To the newbie. And then I am described as a board of aldermen candidate.
So just go to mine. What am I?
It says international assassin. Now, without even...
This is what I do to everybody's writing in there every day. That's why he's...
But without even reading the script, everybody. I can tell you that you probably kill me. Because typically that's what happens.
That you die, right?
Right, well, right.
He said to me yesterday that I was an international assassin, and he talked to me about, I don't do accents, so this will be interesting. And then he talked to me about wearing all black, and so then I asked him, do I actually kill anybody? So he didn't answer that. He laughed. So I don't know if there's any... He said, there's a scene where... Either if I don't get my way, I kill one person or everybody.
Oh, okay.
One person or everybody. So I'm like, what kind of explanation is that?
Well,
am I manic depressive? That's horrible.
Well, you have to digest and you have to interpret the character and you have to
follow
the direction of Kevin Killeen. And
listen, you're acting like you've read the scripts when they're handed to you.
All I know is that what do? We look for our name and then we look for what we're playing and how often our name, like last year, I knew I didn't even have to show up till about halftime of that thing. So I got there probably 9 o'clock.
Right.
And then that's a slight exaggeration. But
you did not come at the beginning because you knew you weren't in
it. Right.
Yeah. So we read it for where our name appears.
Right. He hosed me on that deal this year.
Are you early?
On page 11.
Oh, you're on page 11.
Not to give away too much, but apparently I play a communist, which makes sense because I'm a member of the Board of Aldermen in St. Louis. So.
Can I say this? I've said this before, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that I feel like this play is a representation of all of Kevin Killeen's angst throughout the year.
Of course it
observations
is.
Of all of us, and then a bit of his angst at the end of the year. So he's making you be a communist. What does that say? Making me be an assassin. What does that say about how he feels about us?
All I know is he
I've
has
never
to
played
keep...
the love interest. I mean, what am I not a loving person? Never played the love interest.
I'm not a loving person. No. I mean, that would, but every once in a while you do want to play against type, right?
Yeah, but we're always, I'm always like the mom or something. So that's type.
Well, look, I haven't read the script. I won't read it until that night, but I'm sure it'll be an enjoyable time for everyone. Have you ever read have you ever read the whole thing?
No.
No. But no. Magically, here's the thing about the Holiday Radio Show.
Which is so true.
So
I know what you're going to say.
The script gets delivered. We all give Kevin trouble. We get the script. We don't read it. We just see where our name appears. We may highlight our name with a yellow marker. Then next Monday, we have rehearsal, and we show up at the Sheldon.
Not next Monday.
No, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
December 16th.
Just put panic into the, the folks
yes,
here.
Yes, and then we show up at rehearsal.
So the 16th, we show up at a rehearsal. No one has read the darn thing. We start delivering our lines. Kevin yells at us because we're not delivering them as
well
as possible.
And we go out of order.
Yes. Well, we have to go out of order because sometimes you'll show up or I'll show up, and then we have to get back here to do a show.
Right.
So that's
how he does it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how he does the so-called rehearsal.
Now, I've never had a starring role in this thing because Killeen's excuse is... He knows
he
that
like
I can't.
You?
Well, that's part of it. I think that's the truth. But no, he can't. I can't commit to the rehearsal because I have my show. So the rehearsal time is cut short. I think that's a little lame. But what can I say?
Sounds like the reason for the impeachment hearings.
Exactly. But there you have it. The script is out, and we'll the
how
the
many
agents...
pages is it?
Oh my gosh,
that tells us something.
It does look like The Irishman. 67 pages. Is
I think
that a lot?
That's a little, that's not as long as some.
Yeah, keep in mind, at our age, the font is pretty big here.
Well, thank you for that.
There's about 10 words per page, so I don't think it's as long as it might
so
appear.
So I'm an assassin and you are a communist.
Yeah, can I give out anything more? Let's see here.
You can read the name, some of the names.
Hancock plays the chief of police. Brennan plays the office boss. Family member, Emily Killeen, plays a role here. Tom Ackerman is the college-age brother. Ryan Record's the dad.
I think there are homeless in this. I thought I saw homeless. Like, I think Fred Bottomer is
a... Yeah, the homeless millionaire is Johnny Rabbit. Let's see, where is Fred in here?
Fred is a homeless man. I think Fred Bottomer is a homeless man.
I didn't even see his name on here.
It's the second to last page. The second to last page at the bottom.
Yeah, well, I'm
so I've looked at three pages, the first and the last two.
Okay, let's see here. FBI agent. Oh, yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah. FBI agent Jane Duker. There's a whole page that I didn't get to. Yeah.
Yeah, of all the names and who's playing what.
No, wait, there's a name in here. I'm not going to reveal all the names because there's a few in here that I was a little surprised about, and I'll just leave it at that. I don't see Fred. Oh, here it is. Homeless men, Brian Kelly, Fred Bottomer.
Yeah.
There you go.
I saw
College
that.
Socialists, Roger Brand. Craig Damon and Michael Calhoun.
Michael Calhoun's a college socialist.
Amy's coworker, Jessica Nelson. Do I know that person?
I don't know. Who's Jessica Nelson?
Dave, do you know her? Okay, maybe she... Does she work here? Does she work here, and will she still be working here in 2 weeks? I think is a pretty important question.
That's the only name I did not know of all the names I saw was Jessica Nelson.
Well, Jesse, who works here in the building, and maybe that's Jesse. We know her as Jesse. She's over on the marketing side.
Oh,
be her?
Maybe. I don't know. Okay.
Well,
there you have it. Let me just be the first to say, or the second to say, not reading the whole thing. That I'd be the second to say.
No.
And then I'll be the first to say, I'm not doing an accent. I don't do accents. He better hire linguists for me.
My favorite part is when there's always somebody every year that gets up there. It's going to be Amy this year, okay?
Who's going to ad-lib a lot?
No. They get up there. No, this isn't like John Carney days when the show was twice. Then the show was 4 hours. No, but she'll be, poor Amy will just be delivering her lines as best she knows how.
In all seriousness.
And Colleen will like, Amy, here's what I want. You're too nice. How many times have I heard this? You're just being too, what I need is this.
And he's holding the script in one hand, holding it up. And he's like shaking it a little bit.
Yeah.
He's not like he's like mean or anything, but like insistent.
Well, he has a vision for the show, and he usually gets
it executed. Well, whatever!
Right. we all manage to rise to the occasion. You agree with this. We don't read the script. It all comes together somewhat magically that night, and it really is a lot of fun. I mean, it's one thing to hear it on the radio, but it's fun to be there just to see the things that you won't really pick up on if you're listening to the show on the air.
And I'm glad you said that because my husband stopped going and saying to me that I'd rather listen to it on the radio. It's better to hear it. Now, I will say that we want to fill the theater. There's nothing like playing to empty seats. So if you've never seen this before, it is hilarious
in
person.
Well, there's costumes. We wear, last year I had a wig, and I loved my role last year because I got to wear a wig and be a little incognito, so that was fun. I was a hippie.
Yeah, I have worn a costume before, but I don't know what he told me, by the way, he said to me, get some knee-high black, like, stiletto boots. I'm like, dude, if you buy them, like, if you build it, they will come. If you buy them, I'll wear them, but I'm not going out and buying
some. You're an assassin or a lady of the evening?
I don't know
what he was saying. I don't
know what this person we work with was saying.
Well, what should I wear as a member of the Board of Aldermen? I have to think about that, I guess.
Well, you're just going to wear a suit.
Yeah, that's boring.
And a St. Louis pin.
No, but if I'm a communist, I gotta really do that. I have to get into wardrobe here.
Oh, that's interesting. What do communists wear?
Yeah.
I could not tell you.
Red, hammer and sickle.
What's that collar, the Nehru collar?
What's that?
What's a Nehru collar?
I don't even know if I've heard that word before.
You've not heard of a Nehru collar, Dave Klein?
How do you spell
it? It doesn't
that?
Fold over. It's just like a stand-up collar.
But I didn't know it was called that.
Yeah, Nehru collar.
How do you spell that?
Is it N-E-H?
N-E-H-R-U?
I'm guessing.
Well, Google will correct me.
Yeah, Google.
N-E-H-R-U. Look at that. Who knew? I used to wear, you know what's funny about that is I used to wear those in the 80s.
It's like the members-only jacket collar a little bit.
All right, I'm learning something
every
day.
So the solid color.
I learned two words today. I learned that word, and then there was another word
that
for my
something
last.
Croquet, the
yeah, what, yeah, let's see,
sobriquet.
Sobriquet. That was it, sobriquet. Because it was a story that I interviewed a guest in the last hour, and the line was, and this was about the Steele dossier, a handful of documents in recent times have bent the course of history deeply enough to merit their own sobriquet. I can say the word now. I went to Carol in the news break. I'm like, hey, have you ever seen this word? And you got it right. But
I didn't get it right.
Said sobriquet, didn't we?
We both said sobriquet, and then I asked Google, and Google gave me the audio.
God bless Google.
So there you go. Nehru caller for you.
Google. Did I say Google? God bless Google. Google.
All right, Alexa.
Hey, good thing I have some lines in the holiday radio show, right?
And you're on page 11.
Well,
so
yeah,
you have to show up now.
Yeah, but maybe I'm not at the end. Maybe you kill me off and I'm not in the end of this deal. So
I don't know.
We'll find out.
I don't know.
KMOX.com to find tickets. Don't wait till on eBay. You'll pay half the price if you wait for that.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Mom's got a squeeze, but she wears on a chest. But when daddy comes home.
This is the 40th anniversary of a terrible, terrible rock and roll tragedy. By the way, you know what, and I didn't do this, I don't think, because Friday was a holiday, even though I was here. Friday was the 40th anniversary of the release of The Wall, Pink Floyd's record. Today is the 40th anniversary of 11 people dying at a Who concert in Cincinnati. Now, if you're old enough, you remember this was a huge, huge story in 1979. They called it festival seating, and what happened was is you didn't have reserved seats. This was somewhat new at the time. I mean, it's evolved quite a bit with the floor seating now and the way that they let concertgoers in with different entrances, or you have wristbands or things along those lines. But this was a concert that had more open seating, and Rolling Stone did a great piece. I haven't even read the whole thing. Chet Filippo wrote it, talking about the incident, what happened that night, how the crowd came in, and some of it is just devastating when you see how the details. They weren't even going to open the doors of the venue until 6:30, but the problem was there were so many people that were around the venue, and they felt like they needed to, and people heard the sound check, so they start getting excited. They can hear the band inside. They want it in. And it's like 36 degrees, and the Ohio River is right there, so it feels even colder. They're not opening the doors, but the crowd is getting pretty anxious. And then at 7 p.m., the Who's off the stage. No one in the Coliseum knew that while they ate dinner and conducted rather business as usual. Then they waited for the appointed time to admit the people outside the front doors, but it had already began, the horror had, and you had people that were streaming in, they were getting crushed, and then some people would come out and said, hey, do you guys know what's going on happening in here? There are people literally being trampled upon, and they have several horrifying incidents and eyewitness accounts in there, but a terrible, terrible day in Cincinnati where the Riverfront Coliseum employee who's quoted in the article says, we didn't call it festival seating, we called it animal seating, because when they came in like a herd of cattle. Not a great rock and roll anniversary, but something I think people will remember. Kamala Harris, out! We got a song that goes along with that.
So long, farewell, I'll be just saying goodnight.
I hate
Kamala, we hardly knew ye, and things did not work out. This is why she said she was running.
We need a leader who has the ability to unify our country and see that the vast majority of us have so much more in common than what separates us.
Well, it didn't work out for Kamala. She saw the writing on the wall. I actually predicted this 2 weeks ago, and it didn't happen, just a couple of weeks late. There is really no path for her. She realized that.
So here's the deal, guys. My campaign for president simply does not have the financial resources to continue, and the financial resources we need to continue. I'm not a billionaire. I can't fund my own campaign. And as the campaign has gone on, it has become harder and harder to raise the money we need to compete.
But what I would like is Uncle Joe, because I'm going to start being nice to him. I said some mean things about Uncle Joe at the debates and on the campaign trail, but I really, really, really want him to consider me as a vice presidential candidate, because then I'll have a path to the Oval Office. I may be embellishing some of that. This is one of those things, and you know, I talked about yesterday, I'm going to talk about a little bit more maybe tomorrow or Thursday, the Richard Jewell movie, the new Clint Eastwood movie is really good, but it is a an amazingly powerful and potent indictment of the media and the media treatment of stories when they're trying to be first and they're not looking for the facts. It also is pretty critical of the federal government, the Justice Department as well. But I bring it up because there are all kinds of things and we've seen. I've said from the beginning, I don't like the fake news tag that the president gave to the media because, you know, I thought at the time it certainly was painting with too broad a brush when he says
this. You are fake news.
He says that all the time. But I started changing my mind when Brett Kavanaugh came along. And then the Covington Catholic situation and the Mueller report. And the list goes on. No matter what you think of this president, by the way, for the record, I'm not the biggest fan, certainly not a fan of his personality and his sophomoric and narcissistic behavior. I've made that clear in the past. But then we get to the New York Times, which has kind of been exposed as a joke recently anyway. And this is a story that's on the front of their website today. With the headline, "I don't know Prince Andrew," Trump says, but photos say otherwise. Speaking to reporters in London, President Trump denied knowing Prince Andrew, despite having been photographed with him on several occasions. This is an example of ridiculous journalism by the New York Times. Okay, he says this, "I don't know Prince Andrew, but it's a tough story." Now, if he would have said, "I don't really know Prince Andrew," which is probably what he meant, right? He says, I don't know him, though. So he had his picture taken with Prince Andrew several times. Who cares? President Trump gets his picture. I bet Prince Andrew, you go to Prince Andrew and you show him a lineup of all the people that stood next to him on a regular basis, heads of state included. And he would probably say, "Well, I don't even know." I bet if you ask Prince Andrew, "Do you know Donald Trump?" I don't really know him. But I've had my picture taken with him. Now, if there's evidence to the contrary, if we've caught Donald Trump in another malicious, terrible lie, well, then let's offer that as an example. But the problem is they did this entire story about Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump and Prince Andrew, and never once in this New York Times story did they ever point out any other type of relationship that he might have with Prince Andrew. There's no evidence, of course, in this story that he knows Prince Andrew. And I think it's pretty, it doesn't take much. Ladies and gentlemen, you know this. If you're saying, "Well, I don't know, who can I think of an example of in politics that I've been around?" I mean, I don't really know Lyda Cruz, and I know her a little bit. I've had her on the air many times. Do I know her? I don't really know her. She doesn't know me. But they did an entire front page story on this on President Trump. Front page on the website. Just ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, let's get to our little teenage climate change nut, Greta Thunberg. And I actually feel sorry for Greta Thunberg. I really do, because I think her parents have done a terrible, terrible job of raising her and scaring the hell out of her. So she's in Lisbon.
"We need to do everything we can. We need to work together to make sure that we secure future living conditions for humankind and that we fight for not only ourselves, but for our children and for our grandchildren and for every single living being on Earth."
Yes.
"We are facing a global emergency. Everyone has to do everything they can in order to make sure they are on the right side of history. Because in order to change everything, we need everyone."
Well, look, it's not the emergency or anywhere near the emergency that Greta Thunberg thinks it is. We went over this yesterday. There are ways to adapt. The world is not going to end in 12 years, and there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic, even though this little kid is scared to death about growing up, has even gone so far as to say she thinks that young people should consider not having children. Now, she, of course, has didn't she win the Nobel Prize? She's an environmental alarmist. She's a teenage guru. She talks about carbon emissions all the time. She doesn't want to fly around the world, right? Because then she would be exposed, as Al Gore and others have, as a hypocrite. So instead of flying to Madrid, Spain, to be at this conference, the 2019 United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP25, she crossed the Atlantic in a catamaran. So she went from Virginia to Portugal to spotlight climate change. She doesn't want any CO2 emissions. Well, there's a slight problem with that. And this is what happens all the time. See, the yacht captain who volunteered to sail Greta Thunberg on her journey, this poor guy had to deal with her for God knows how many days going from Virginia to Lisbon. But he flew from England to Virginia. So this guy captains the ship, but he has to jump on an airplane from England to Virginia to take the catamaran to Lisbon, right? Not exactly reducing carbon emissions, probably adding to them. So you had a situation, even, I guess, when this happened, when she needed transportation to Madrid. Let's see here. Something I canceled because of political protest. She's in California. I'm doing a coughing fit here, so I apologize. She's in California trying to get to Chile. She puts a plea out on social media, and someone comes in. But again, the same thing happened. Someone had to fly in to take her there. So any kind of carbon reduction would have been zapped out by those incidents.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
I love this time of year when all of a sudden I'll start coughing and I can't complete thoughts, and that's what happened before the break. The just closing the loop on Greta Thunberg, if you will. So the bottom line is she decides to go to Lisbon for this climate change deal, the United Nations Climate Change Conference. So she's all happy about it. She tweets out, I'm going to make it to COP25 in Madrid. I've been offered a ride from Virginia on the 48-foot catamaran La Vagabond. And there were a couple of Australians that decided to take her across the Atlantic. Very generous. But they had to fly across the Atlantic to get there, thus pretty much negating any carbon emission reduction that Greta Thunberg was looking for. Now, this is not the first time this has happened. In August, she arrived in New York City on board a solar-powered yacht. She traveled from England, had plans to attend a UN meeting, and she wanted to make appearances at rallies in various cities. The yacht had to be brought back to England, and that required a two-man sailing crew to fly from England to New York to sail back home. So, again, no carbon emissions actually saved. This is like one of those things. It's all great and everything and touchy-feely, and it seems like a great, generous offer, but all you got to do is think about it just a little bit, and it doesn't really make a difference at all. Speaking of thinking of things, I'm a radio person for a reason. Didn't really understand math and science very much, had no other skill set, so I ended up being a guy who worked on the radio. As a disc jockey, now I'm a talk show host. But there are stories that make my brain hurt, and this is one of them that I saw over the weekend. Scientists find monster black hole so big they didn't think it was possible. And I'm reading this story, and I'm thinking, man, it really is interesting, but I don't know what it all means. So we invited Will Snyder, who is a manager of the James S. McDonald Planetarium, with us this afternoon. Hey, Will, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here.
One of the things that I thought was interesting is that there was just, and this was a Chinese-led expedition of scientists that discovered this inside our own galaxy. It's described as 70 times the mass of the sun, and they didn't think, I guess scientists have never seen what's called a 70 solar mass stellar black hole anywhere.
And that's right. It goes against sort of the idea of how we thought this type of black holes could form. But the important thing to remember is this is a stellar black hole. And, you know, we start to get in some big vocab here. But even though this is big for a stellar black hole, this is not even close to being the biggest black hole we've ever discovered.
Oh, okay. All right. So let me back up a little bit. Let's describe. What is a black hole? What does that mean?
So black hole, you know, that's one of those exciting things that captures people's imagination because in a lot of ways we still have questions about it. It's one of those mysteries, we don't understand them, but what we do know is it's something left behind, in this case with a stellar black hole, when a star many times larger than the sun explodes violently, it collapses in on itself, and what's left behind has so much mass in such a small area that not even light itself can escape from it. So basically you're talking about something really heavy in a really small amount of space.
Now, there was a quote in the story that I saw from one of the researchers in China that said black holes of such mass should not even exist in our galaxy, according to most of the current models of stellar evolution. But you go back to your comment that this is not one of the bigger black holes. So how do those two things jibe?
So that's a great question, because when we talk about black holes, we really separate them into some categories. So there are supermassive black holes, and those really only exist at the center of large galaxies, and those are the giants. Those are your monster guys. They can weigh literally million times to even a few billion times the mass of the sun.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. That big?
Yeah, that big. I mean, it's huge. But what we're talking about here is much smaller.
So, by the way, they point this out, like the Milky Way is one of those, right?
So, yeah, at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, we certainly would have a black hole many, many times larger than this black hole that this article is talking about.
Okay, and I cut you off, so go ahead.
Yeah, so instead what we're talking about is not one of these monsters at the center of a galaxy. Instead, stellar mass black holes are left behind when a star collapses. And the current model for how we think those form is, you know, one individual big star at the end of its life, it goes through a huge dramatic explosion called a supernova, and it leaves that solar mass black hole behind. In this case, the problem is all the ones we've observed so far are only about 5 to 20 times as heavy as the Sun. And the reason people have said this one maybe shouldn't exist is there just isn't a star big enough to have created the mass that we see here. So we have to get creative with our ideas and think, well, how is that possible? What could have created that black hole instead?
So what does it all mean in the end? It's fascinating. They didn't expect it. I know if I was a scientist, I'd get pretty geeked up about things along these lines. But what do we hope to learn, or what would be a next step?
Well, I think that's the thing. It's the fact that we are learning. You know, black holes are a mystery, and when you look up into the sky, there really are so many mysteries at the end of the day. We're learning more about space quicker than really ever we have before, but something like this that we discover and it goes against an idea that we had, that's a wonderful thing. It means maybe that idea is wrong, but something else is possible, and it's the only way we're actually going to figure out what's going on out there is by having ideas, have them proved wrong, and then make the next step.
They mentioned something in the Washington Post piece that I, you know, first discovered about this, that the study in China also points to something called a phenomenon known as a fallback supernova, which, by the way, would be a good band name.
It would be, yeah.
First and foremost. What is a fallback supernova?
So what they're thinking in this case is, rather than just having one star that sort of collapsed in on itself, we're thinking of a binary star. So it's just like how the Earth and the planets orbit around the Sun, but out in space, stars can orbit around each other too. And in this case, we're having one big star that went supernova. That would have created a black hole smaller than the one that they found, but basically the other star that was orbiting around it would have been pulled in into it and sort of eaten it from the inside out, leaving that black hole that now weighs more than one individual star would have.
Is there any chance that somebody that is known as a Mandalorian in something that looks like a baby Yoda is a part of any of this that we've been talking about, just out of curiosity?
Well, you know, the great thing about space is in an infinite universe, anything is possible, so maybe.
Hey, not to...
This would have to be in a galaxy far, far away.
Are you watching that show, by the way?
You know what? I have to admit, I haven't, but, you know, lots of people around here have been, and it's amazing how popular it's
been. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's well done, in case you want to check it out. Let me ask you one more question, and I don't mean to ambush and ask you something that might not be your area of expertise, but I'm always fascinated. So every day I do the sunrise and the sunset times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's kind of interesting, you know, as the days
Absolutely.
Get longer and the days get shorter. So we're in this period right now, and I'll tell you what, Will. Look, people have tried to explain this to me. You probably sensed this just in our 5-minute conversation, 8-minute conversation. I'm not very smart. But there's a period, and we're in that right now, where the sun sets every day at 4:39. It started on December 1st. It ends on the 13th, and then it goes to 4:40. Now, the sun rise time is adjusted, 7:01 tomorrow, or actually 7:01 today, 7:02 tomorrow, 7:03. But why does that sunset time stay that way? Do you know that by any chance?
Well, I mean, I can't say we're getting close to the winter solstice right now. Of course, our shortest day of the year, and those changes in not only the seasons, but those sunset sunrise times really all have to do with the tilt of our Earth and how,
yeah.
You know, as we're traveling in our orbit around the sun, you know, those angles are changing during the summer solstice when our northern hemisphere is tilted away. The sun, so to speak, has to travel the longest distance across our sky as the Earth turns, versus now we're getting into that time where tilting towards it has a much shorter distance to travel. And the cool thing is with the winter solstice coming up this month, solstice really just means sun still, and that's sort of what we're seeing as those times start to stay the same. It's as the sun is sort of getting to its lowest point before going higher in our
yeah,
sky.
I got you. So we start to go in the other direction on the 14th, but then the sunrise time stays a little bit stable. But then when we get, of course, to, it would be the 19th is the solstice, right? That's the longest day or the shortest day?
21st. So 21st. It should be the 21st is the winter solstice.
Okay. See, again, shows what I know. I was just testing you there, Will, just to see if you knew that.
Hey, I like it. Keep it coming.
All right. Hey, I love this stuff. Even though I don't understand science, I'm fascinated by it. I think a lot of people are. Will Snyder over at the Planetarium, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. 3:44 at the Voice of St. Louis. We have an audio cut of the day still to come. You know what tomorrow is, Roger, don't you?
Hump day, Wednesday.
Christmas come early for those of us who travel on I-44.
That's right. They're doing the finishing touches. They've been out there sweeping up the lanes there between Grand and Kings Highway. So
the most workers I've seen out there in months, quite candidly. But I'll be glad to have those open, and I'm sure they'll shut them down again. But it'll be nice to have those open. I'm sure there'll be still, you know, people that get jammed up and can't get around.
Just
right?
More lanes to have accidents in, so that's fine.
Right. Well, that's probably true. Just wait for that first skiff of snow again in December. All right. Roger's back here in about 7 minutes with traffic. I have an audio cut of the day. I could do a bunch. Let's just do a bunch here. Got a bunch that I want to do, so we'll do a couple. Do maybe an audio daily double or a trifecta.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. This first one is just funny, and it's not political, and I just thought the visual here will, I think, be appealing to you. There was a teenage girl who is 16 years old, and she's eating at a Chick-fil-A with friends. I'm not sure where this is, but it doesn't really matter. So, you know, goofy teenager, she's sitting around. She says, well, that would be kind of funny if I eat my meal sitting in a baby seat, like a high chair. So her friends shove her into the high chair. And then all of a sudden she's stuck and she can't get out. They had to cut her out of the chair.
I laid on the ground and then I had two people pulling on my arms and two people on my leg. And so I was like lifted up off the ground and that didn't work. And then they told me to jump up and down and run to see if it like loosened, and it didn't loosen at all.
Yeah, that's Addison Trent. She's out of the chair now. Her mom had to pay for the seat. President Trump with the French President Macron earlier today. Of course, impeachment came up.
I think Adam Schiff is a deranged human being. I think he grew up with a complex for lots of reasons that are obvious. I think he's a very sick man, and he lies. Adam Schiff made up my conversation with the president of Ukraine. Now, one of the reasons people keep talking about it is that's what they saw. We have a perfectly beautiful 3 or 4 page transcription, and then in the other case, a 2 page transcription of the conversation. But a lot of people didn't read that. How many people called you? A friend of mine called up, the top person in New York called up, great friend of mine, very successful. Gee, I didn't like what was said. I said, oh, where did you see it? Did you read it? No, I didn't read it. I heard Adam Schiff give it. I said, well, that's not what was said. And I sent him a copy of what was said. He said, this is great. This isn't what he said. This guy is sick. He made up the conversation. He lied. If he didn't do that in the halls of Congress, he'd be thrown in a jail. But he did it in the halls of Congress, and he's given immunity. This is a sick person. He's a liar.
She went after his former friend, Nancy Pelosi, I guess, former friend.
And by the way, Nancy Pelosi knew he was lying, and she went on her show, Stephanopoulos, and she said he told the truth. So she was lying, too. These people are deranged.
And then there was the French president commenting on the brain death of NATO under U.S. leadership.
I know that my statements created some reactions and shake a little bit a lot of people. I do stand by. When we speak about NATO, it's not just about money. We have to be respectful.
So they also talked about Russia.
I think we feel that we can get along with Russia. And I think it's a good thing to get along with Russia.
It is important to have a strategic dialogue with Russia. We must do so without naivety.
Well, they went into various topics. I don't believe that the French president was extremely comfortable in that whole press setting, but entertaining nonetheless, and maybe a little bit informational, but more entertaining as usual than anything else. Those are your audio cuts of the day this afternoon on KMOX. Total Information PM is up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.